Chapter 21. On the 29th day, the old gray albatross returned and began introducing bad luck to us in large doses. At first I was glad to see him, a familiar thing. I wondered where he had been when the storm was at its height. He circled high above the boat, darting now and then to inspect a wave that rose to meet him. The sea was rough and sullen. The wind had blown contrarily throughout the night, and I had left the sea anchor out to hold us back and steady us. Right after sunrise, I thought of the anchor first. It was the only means we had of controlling the boat, and after every misadventure, I checked to see that it was safe. This morning, I found that the drive of the high wind against the boat had pulled the jacket to the surface, where it lay collapsed. I started to pull it in, intending to shake it out and let it go again. Without its drag, the small gale was sending us away from our direction, and I felt that every mile counted in our chance to live a little longer. As I hauled in the anchor, a small fish came into view beneath the surface at the bow. It was the same kind as we had caught before. Food. I watched him warily. He swam under the boat. As I got the anchor aboard, out he came again. He paused right in front of me. If I had had the knife, I could have stabbed him. I turned to look for the knife. I fumbled in the tool pocket for several seconds, trying to keep an eye on the fish at the same time. He lay on the surface, resting. I moved to the side of the boat, but in my weakness I was not quick enough. A flirt of his tail sent him drifting out of reach. I waited, and he held himself still, tantalizingly lifting and falling with the rolling waves. Finally, he swung an inch or two closer, and I lunged, but got nothing but water in the face for my pains. I lay across the gunwale for a moment, resting. I needed to gather myself to fix the anchor. As I waited, a great spotted leopard shark, about 7 feet long, poked his nose out of the water not 6 inches from my face. I drew back, startled. If I had had the nerve, I could have snatched him by the gills. I hesitated for several seconds and tried to make myself grab him, but I couldn't. The truth is, I was a little afraid of him. I was conscious of this and a little disgusted as he twisted and dived out of view beneath a gray-green wave. I cursed my timidity. I probably couldn't have held the monster, but I might have hauled him into the boat before I was exhausted, and then he would have been a goner. We could have held him until he suffocated. That would have been a lot of meat, I reflected wearily. He weighed about 100 pounds, I guessed. The wind rose higher, and the waves came faster. The swells uncoiled like great green snakes and burst into white at the top, then fell apart with an angry roar. They rolled beneath the light raft and raised us up until we looked into a sickening depth. Then we would spin downward, sometimes missing the break, sometimes whirling in the wild white froth. We shipped water, gallons at a time, and bailed frantically with our hands. We watched the waves like surf riders, rolling our weight from side to side as the combers tossed the boat like a toy. We learned to shift ourselves adroitly when the crest hit, to keep the raft in balance. But the sea is cunning. It can bide its time and spring like a beast. The wind was its ally. The raft rose slowly as the comber uncoiled beneath us and a little to one side. The wind seemed to pause for breath. We eyed the wave's curling summit. A wall of green laced with white, translucent as we saw it against the sky, collapsed all over us. Its weight made our ears ring and filled our nostrils. Coughing and blinded, we fell across the gunwale. The wind, as if it had been waiting, blew a heavy gust that raised the raft and tipped it over. We were in the sea again, a more fearsome sea than any of us had ever seen. We all had the same thought, I guess, to grab that raft. Once more we were fortunate. We clasped it in our arms and held with all our strength. With the mad water pulling at my legs, I looked at the boys. Tony was holding on frantically. His eyes were closed, and he was saying a prayer in Polish. Jean's lips were stretched with his effort and showed his teeth clenched. "Hold on!" I screamed. I don't think I was heard in the howling wind and waves. It didn't matter. I maneuvered around to the other side, holding my head down as waves dashed against my face. The sea was clubbing me, trying to beat me down. I pulled my head between my shoulders and took the stunning blows as groggy fighters do. I got my hand beneath the boat and lifted. I felt as if my heart was stopping. I knew I had to do every little thing right while in this maelstrom, or I'd die. Again, I tricked the wind. It swept beneath, filled the inside, and lifted the raft right side up, slamming its bottom against a slanted wall of sea. We flung ourselves against the raft again. I somehow scrambled in and grabbed Tony by both wrists. I let myself fall to a sitting position, braced my feet, and pulled him in. Between us, then, we rescued Jean. All of us lay and panted, heads down. Sometime later, maybe hours, I took the inventory. All our spare rags were gone, but the water-catching rags were there. Then, I missed the anchor. This was a terrible blow. Now we could not control the raft except by rowing, and our last experience with rowing had so weakened us that I knew we would have to give it up, except in the last extremity. Our peril made my mind sharper. I went over our gear in search of anything that might make a suitable sea anchor, but the only likely thing I found was the piece of patching material, of the same fabric as the boat, about 12 inches long by 6 inches wide. I rigged it on the line, but I found at once that this makeshift would not do. For one thing, it would not sink deep enough. Secondly, it was too small. I tried putting the pliers on the line, also the few steel pieces remaining from the gun, in an arrangement like the tail of a kite. The weighted line held strongly, but it made our boat yaw back and forth in the trough of the sea, so that we shipped great quantities of water every time we hit a comber. This was our last possibility, and I was determined to make it work. I left the new anchor out all day, but we had to bail constantly. By sundown, I could see that we would not have strength enough to keep this up. Soon the water would begin to rise faster than we could sweep it out, and we would founder. Against my will, I did the only thing I could. There was a strong southwest wind blowing us directly opposite to our desires, but I took the anchor in and let the boat drift. I thought, it's drift or drown. We watched nightfall, without joy. I noted, irrelevantly, that the albatross was feeding.